Okay, everybody. We have our next speaker up here, Mr. Ross Bannatyne. He is the Director of Marketing at Virago Technologies. Ross is a veteran of the semiconductor industry, having worked in engineering, marketing, and management roles, and is currently serving as the Director of Marketing at Virago Technologies. He's the author of two books, the first one, Using Microprocessors and Microcomputers, and the second, Electronic Control Systems. And he has patents in fail-safe electronics and development tools. Today, Ross will be talking to us about cost-effective component solutions to radiation-hardened, low-budget small sats. Please help me in welcoming Mr. Ross Bannatyne.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know, someone came around our booth late yesterday afternoon, and they said, Virago, I know that company from somewhere. That name rings a bell. And it was because he was walking around with the name round his neck all day. So I'm glad that these were useful. So I'm Ross Bannatyne. I'm representing Virago Technologies. For those of you who are not familiar with our company, we are a fabulous high-tech company based out of Austin, Texas. We've actually been going since 2004. Late in 2015, we changed our name from Silicon Space Technologies to Virago Technologies. And really at that time, we had a much greater focus on commercializing the technology that we had developed over the previous 10 years. Over those 10 years, we pretty much worked on government research type projects, which allowed us to develop our technology, which is known as hard cell, and it's a way to radiation harden any type of CMOS product. So we put some implants into a standard CMOS flow to harden against the effects of radiation, and also equally effective on high temperature and electrical stress induced latch-up. So we developed this technology known as hard cell. We've run memory products, DSP products, microcontroller products. We've licensed it to several other semiconductor suppliers, such as TI and LSI Logic, and they have created space-grade products based on this hard cell technology. So we've been focused on creating our own modest portfolio of Virago branded products over the last couple of years. The nice thing about using CMOS is that there's a lot of fabs available. The security of supply is very good. The modifications that we do itself do not have an impact on the performance of the transistors or the power consumption or the yield. So it's an effective way of hardening those devices. And really, in a nutshell, that's what Virago tried to do, is to leverage the things that we can from commercial technology in order to bring those economies of scale and economic benefits to rad hard chips. So we leverage commercial wafer fabs. We leverage commercial IP such as the ARM processor core. A bit about our technology. This chart here shows the classic cross-section of a MOS device. There's an NMOS device on the left and a PMOS device on the right. And it shows a couple of transistors. And superimposed on this cross-section, you can see a bipolar transistor structure. It looks like a thyristor, and it behaves like a thyristor. Now, this is really a byproduct of any CMOS manufacturing. So any CMOS device comes with these extra embedded features of millions of parasitic bipolar transistors that are embedded on the wafer. Now, usually under normal circumstances, when the chip is operating, if it's within electrical spec and temperature spec, these parasitics don't tend to be a problem. The problem arises in the event that the parasitics become forward biased. And when they switch on, it creates a short circuit path from VDD to VSS, VSS to VDD. And that condition is known as latch-up. And you have a large current immediately flows through the device. Quite often you can get out of a latch-up state by resetting the device, and sometimes it can destroy it. So that's really the most critical space radiation effect, where there's a particle strike and it has the effect of forward biasing the structure, and it goes into latch-up and it can be destroying for the chip. So we put in a couple of implants. This is what we call hard cell. And they're a horizontal and a vertical implant that create a highly conductive area where the parasitics reside. And the effect of the implants is to reduce the gain of the parasitic NPN device and reduce the RP well resistance. And that creates a path that basically immunizes against the possibility of these parasitics becoming forward biased and switching on. And that's pretty much what hard cell is. Now, there are other radiation effects which can be damaging to the chip, perhaps in not such a spectacular way as latch up, but there are other complementary, more conventional technologies that we also implement into these devices to protect against other radiation effects, such as single event upsets, single event transients, and to increase the TID capability. For the memory arrays on the chip, we add an error detection and correction subsystem. And the way that works is, as the CPU is fetching words from memory, it inspects each word on a byte level. So we can detect 2-bit errors per byte and correct for one. So as you fetch a 32-bit word, you can detect 8 and correct 4. So at that point, the next level of protection becomes to avoid having 2 single bit errors within a single byte. So to reduce the probability of that occurring, we add a scrub engine. And a scrub engine is complementary to the EDAC, and that really scrubs through the memory sequentially, autonomously of the CPU, and it's looking for bit errors. And as it finds a bit error, it corrects them. So those are corrected before the EDAC even gets to inspect that word. The scrub engine is programmable for speed, so you know it's possible as you're recording upsets on the memory, you can determine what type of radiation zone you're in, increase the scrub engine in order to prevent the possibility of having a couple of bit errors within a single byte. Another technique that we employ in order to prevent multi-bit errors is just by spacing off the memory. So logically adjacent bits are separated by a byte. And that means that a strike that comes in from a low angle cannot take out more than one bit per byte. So that's how we protect against memory. And it's very effective. We're seeing soft error rates of the order of e to the minus 15 on these devices. There is some protection that we put in to protect against single event upsets in the logic areas. Now, because typically most chips like this that have a processor and a memory, the majority of the chip tends to be consumed by memory areas, because memories, SRAMs, tend to be big logical structures. There's usually more chance of having a memory bit error than a logic bit error, but that possibility does exist. We employ dual interlock cell structures to replace all of the latches. So effectively a latch is replaced by a structure that has a three voting mechanism to avoid the possibility of a single strike taking out a logic latch. We deploy triple modular redundancy for all of the internal registers, and we use other techniques such as clock glitch filters, where if there's a single event transient on a logic line or a clock line, it prevents that transient from being propagated throughout the logic circuit. So we kind of complement the hard cell, which is mainly there to protect against latch up, with some other conventional protection mechanisms. This is a block diagram of the microcontroller chip based on an ARM Cortex-M0 that we developed. It's currently designed into a lot of small satellite applications, and it's flying today. I wanted to show this because it's got a basic set of microcontroller type of features, such as the memories, lots of timer channels, serial communications, such as UARTs and SPIs and I2Cs. The radiation specs are very strong, 300K TID. Soft error rate, I mentioned, e to the minus 15, and LET spec of 110 MeV. We do all the radiation testing on these devices, and we have exceeded these specifications. I typically see two use cases for this microcontroller today. The first one is as a standalone controller in an onboard computer. Now, in every application, a 50 megahertz ARM Cortex-M0 is not necessarily powerful enough to be the main controller in many of these systems. Often there's an FPGA, which is really much faster and has the option for multi-cores running. And I tend to see the Virago chip being used as a watchdog or safety monitor in those types of applications. So in this case here, there's a Vertex 5 FPGA, and the microcontroller is sitting on the right-hand side of the PCB there. And what it does is it loads the FPGA and monitors it and resets it in the event of a latch-up condition. In this case, the folks that implemented it used the COTS version, the commercial version of the FPGA, because it was significantly cheaper than using the radiation version. So the point is, I see the chip being used quite often to selectively harden some critical devices on a particular system where certain COTS components are used, and there's a rad-hard base that's there to really protect the other COTS devices in the system. We like the ARM Cortex-M0. There's a lot of software available for it. There's a lot of tools. That's one of the reasons that we wanted to use it. We don't want to be reinventing the wheel with tools and drivers and stacks and all of the software that has to be developed for a typical embedded system. The other thing we like about it is the power consumption. It's very good. So running flat out with all the peripherals on, all the timers clocking full speed, you know, we're measuring about 30 milliamps in the core, which is pretty good. And I think that's a key consideration going forward for many of these small satellite applications. This is a development kit that we created for the device. As I say, there's a selection of different software tools that are set up to run with this device, and FreeRTOS also runs. What was quite interesting about this board, you see there's a plastic version of the device on the board. We had initially planned to create the part only in a ceramic version, which we figured would be the most popular for space. And we assembled a number of parts in a plastic package to keep the price down of this development kit. And when we made this available, it was actually a surprising number of folks came back and said, hey, plastic is fine. We're quite happy to fly plastic. And it's a bit cheaper than the ceramic version. So that's another trend that we are observing. We're currently working on an Arm Cortex M4 as our next generation. We're doing some running some silicon through the fabs right now. It runs faster, it's more highly integrated, there's more on-chip peripherals. I think this will open some more options over and above the Cortex M0. Another project that we're working on is a system in package, which we've taken our microcontroller and added a Radhard A to D and a Radhard FRAM. And really what's driving us to do this is miniaturization, as we see it becoming more attractive for small satellite developers to get into a CubeSat type of format. It's becoming increasingly difficult to squeeze everything into those smaller CubeSat form factors. So we've had requests to squeeze multi-chips into a single small package. And this is a chip that we're currently working on today and will qualify for flight. As I say, primarily we are a chip developer. And unfortunately, one of the things that the chip developers have to do these days is develop lots of software and develop lots of hardware to make it easy for people to use our chip. We did a reference design for an onboard computer for a CubeSat form factor. It's based on the Pumpkin CubeSat bus, which is a popular standard for typically academic types of CubeSats. Actually, Pumpkin came to us and said they had been having a lot of requests for a Radhard board that they could add to their portfolio. So we created a design based on our micro, and we populated it with some Radhard components around it. So this is available. You can buy a board or the schematics available and the bill of materials and such like, and you can modify it as you see fit. Thank you very much for your attention.
All right. Thank you very much, Ross. I'll open up the floor for questions. Who's first? Yes.
How mature is the plastic for space environments?
I'm sorry, how much the price?
How much is the price for the plastic?
I'm asking how mature is plastic for space environments?
That's a good question. I see that we have probably shipped just as many plastic parts into typically small sats as we have ceramics. So we're flying plastic parts today. I think it is popular in the new space community more so than the traditional primes, although I do see some interest from the primes and organizations such as Aerospace Corp to develop a specification that everyone can agree upon is a low-risk plastic option. So I think today probably flying is somewhat limited, but I certainly see a strong trend of interest in flying plastic packages.
Does plastic affect the on-orbit lifetime?
I believe it would, because the advantage of ceramic is that it is a hermetic package, so it doesn't outgas. With plastic, there's always a risk of outgassing. And there may be some situations where you're in, you've got some components within the system, such as cameras, the outgassing would have a negative effect upon. So I think that the folks that are playing it really safe today are still strongly behind hermetic ceramic packages because there is a risk. So I think it's really a case of weighing up the risk in the mission assurance model when you're deciding for flying plastic. Thank you.
All right, thank you for that one. Anyone else? Okay, well, at this time, please help me thank Ross for his great presentation. Thank you.